Hi, and welcome to NASIO Voices, where we talk all things state IT. I'm Amy Glasscock in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Alex Whitaker here in Washington, D.C. Today, Amy and I are talking about a new NASIO report called Privacy Progressing, How the State Chief Privacy Officer Role is Growing and Evolving. Amy was the lead author on the report, so I'm going to be asking her all about it today. Let's get started.
Yes, let's do it. I don't know what to say since I'm not going to welcome myself to the podcast now.
Honestly, I'm incredibly nervous. You're probably the biggest guest we've had in quite a while.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and get into it, though. So we know the role of the state chief privacy officer is growing, and the movement of a privacy bill on the Hill is a testament to how important the privacy issue is nationally. I'm wondering if you can tell us about the history of the role and why you decided to do this survey and report.
Yeah, sure. So NASIO started tracking the state chief privacy officer role in 2015, and that was when we started the Privacy and Data Protection Forum. And at that time, we had identified five states that had somebody working on enterprise privacy as all or at least a good chunk of their job. And by 2019, there were 12. So that seemed like some pretty steady growth. And we did our first survey in 2019 of the state chief privacy officers. And back then, it was not a super formal survey. It was really just interview-based. I talked with each of the state chief privacy officers and asked them some specific questions. But then there was a lot of, you know, room for open-ended responses and things, too. We really just wanted to get an idea of who these people were, what their jobs were like. I was getting calls from trade press at the time about the role and realizing I didn't really know the answers to the questions that they were asking. So it was a way to get to know these people better and be able to answer those questions, and also just useful for the privacy officers to see how their peers were answering the same questions.
Sure. Yeah. And that's certainly a lot of growth for such an important position in a relatively short amount of time.
In 2022, fast forward 3 years, we have 21 states that have a state chief privacy officer. So just since 2019, that's a 75% increase. So kind of seems like it's growing exponentially. Also, last year, we had our first in-person state CPO summit. We did a virtual one in 2020. So we thought this would be a good time to do another report, kind of a follow-up, see how the role is changing. Obviously, it's a group that we're nurturing within the NASIO family, and we wanted to see how the new CPOs and current CPOs were viewing their role as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's really fascinating, and I know we're excited to get these folks together again at the upcoming NASIO event in Providence.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, you know, we've seen this great growth, but why do you think states are focusing more on privacy now than in the past? Is it kind of coming from a citizen level and filtering up, or is it sort of an impetus of policy? And where's this coming from?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of two things. One is that there's this increasing demand and increasing availability from states for digital services. And these digital services are requiring citizens to share more personal information with states. So that's one thing. And that's something that's definitely increased during the pandemic as well. And then there's also, as you said, like coming up from the citizens, there's this increased citizen awareness of privacy rights. We've got state legislatures taking up privacy bills. As you mentioned, the federal government is moving somewhat along on a privacy bill. It's in the news, it's in the legislatures. So citizens are, you know, demanding that states treat their information according to their privacy rights. And I think that states are just realizing that they need to prioritize privacy in the same way that they've prioritized cybersecurity over the last decade or two.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So in the report, too, you also talk about how the role is maturing and it's kind of becoming more official in state government, which I think is really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, how is that manifesting? What are some of the ways in which it's maturing over the last 3 years?
Yeah, definitely. So we asked a bunch of questions that sort of, I think, show this increase in the maturity of the role. So one is we ask how the role is established. Is it established in statute, executive order? Is it not established? So in 2019, three states had it established in statute and a handful by executive order. This year, five were in statute, two by executive order, two by procedure, two by administrative rule. So those are all more official than either not being established or just kind of being mentioned in a policy, which some still are that way as well. Mm-hmm. We also asked, are you the first person to hold the role of chief privacy officer in the state? In 2019, 67% of the CPOs we interviewed were the first person. And then this year, only 41% said that they were the first person to hold the role. And I see that as some of these states have had the role long enough that there's been turnover. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've had two or three chief privacy officers already in that state. We asked about law degrees. So in 2019, 58% had a law degree. In 2022, 76%. We asked about their title. Do you have the title chief privacy officer, or do you have some other title like general counsel, something like that? And in 2019, 58% had that title. And in 2022, it's 65%. So more states are, you know, maybe they had somebody doing this work under the general counsel role, and then now they've officially established a chief privacy officer in their state.
Mm-hmm.
And then reporting structure too. We consider this a maturing process. And so we ask, who do you report to? CIO, CISO, another departmental head? In 2019, 42% reported to the CIO, which was way more than the private sector. The private sector, it's like 2 or 3% of CPOs report to the CIO. And in 2022, that went down to 29%. So 42% to 29%. And, you know, just because we are, you know, the association that represents the state CIO, we don't necessarily think that the CPO should be reporting to the CIO. We see that as like, okay, the state government is sort of moving toward the private sector. And, you know, we recognize that privacy is important across the enterprise. It's tied to security and data, not just technology. And we believe that the state CPO should have jurisdiction over the entire executive branch. Mm-hmm. But with that said, we asked CPOs about their authority. Do you have authority over all state government, executive branch, or your agency only? And while 83% in 2019 said they had authority over the executive branch, in 2022, only 53% said that they did. So that was the one question that kind of seemed like it was going backwards, you know, not in a great direction. And mm-hmm. I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, we had small sample sizes for both of these surveys, you know, 12 people, 17 people. Maybe it was the way that a given CPO was interpreting what authority meant in that question. So we'll just kind of have to see as time goes on how that develops.
Yeah, for sure. And so you asked a lot of questions in 2019 that you repeated for this report. And I think that's so great to kind of help track the role. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there were some new questions that didn't make it into the report before. So I'm wondering kind of what those questions were and what did you find by asking some new things?
Yeah. Well, we asked more questions about the role. Like, are they more focused on operations or policy? And it was a mix, mostly about, I think, like 83% said it was a mix of operations and policy. We asked if they are more focused on consumer privacy, citizen privacy, internal privacy, or mix. And it was kind of a three-way split between internal, citizen, and mix, because consumer privacy really is more about private companies and their customers. Mm-hmm. We asked if they use a privacy framework like NIST, and if so, how they operationalize that framework. So kind of a more open-ended question there. If they have staff that report to them and what those roles are. If they have the authority to enforce privacy compliance, 41% did. And we asked if they have a dedicated budget, and only one state did.
Got it. So I'm going to go ahead and bet that some of the budgeting is a challenge for some of these CPOs, and would love to know, in addition, you know, what are the other top challenges and what sort of resources do they need as they're confronting these challenges?
Yes, absolutely. Budget was number one. So we gave them a list of 7 challenges and asked them to choose the top 3 challenges that they were facing in their role. And so number one was lack of funding for privacy initiatives. Definitely the biggest pain point. Number two was lack of understanding among state employees or confusion. And number three was lack of qualified staff. And so what's interesting about these challenges, I think, is that the lack of funding and the lack of qualified staff are problems that we hear about across state government IT or cybersecurity for that matter. But the lack of understanding and confusion is kind of unique to privacy, I feel like, because from what we're hearing from CPOs is there's a lot of misunderstanding about what is privacy compared to security. If we do security training, why do we also have to do privacy training? That sort of thing that they're always dealing with. So then we asked about what are the top resources that they need to make their, you know, job more effective. Give them 10 choices. All got votes. All the challenges got votes too, by the way. And then we asked them to choose their top five. Five and six were ties, so I'll give you six of the top ones. Number one resource was adequate funding, which goes along with the number one challenge, an effective privacy governance structure, support of the governor or other senior state management leaders, adequate staffing slash personnel, support of state agencies, and incorporation of privacy into the state enterprise architecture.
Got it. So certainly some challenges that need some attention. And I'm sure that we'll be working on it more over the next few years.
Yes.
And, you know, the role has grown substantially across the states, as I think has really been demonstrated. But a lot more states have yet to create this role. So are there any recommendations included for a state that might be considering this and some resources that might be available as they could explore developing a CPO in their state?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm often hearing from CIOs or CISOs that don't have a chief privacy officer yet, and they're wanting to hire one soon. I know of at least three states that are planning on doing that this year that I've heard from specifically. So we definitely wanted to put some recommendations in there for states that are working on developing that role right now. So number one is, like the challenges and the resources, ensure dedicated funding for a privacy program and staff. So not only is this something that needs to be considered when creating the role in the future, but it's also something that current chief privacy officers need right now, because only one state, as we said, has a dedicated budget. So not only is that funding for the privacy program, but funding for staff too, because, you know, one of those needs was dedicated staffing personnel. So number two was establish privacy governance. So I feel like we're always talking about governance and enterprise architecture at NASIO. So if a state can work privacy into their enterprise architecture, we think that's critical for elevating privacy and giving authority to the CPO and the privacy program. And we also encourage states to follow a privacy framework, because not all of them are doing that already. And that's a really great idea. And then number three was develop agency relationships. And this was similar to a recommendation we had in the 2019 report as well. States should try to have a privacy lead in each agency so that there's somebody there who understands privacy as well as the business of the agency and who can be a champion for the enterprise privacy policies. So we also suggested that for agencies that don't have privacy leads and can't find privacy experts to hire, because that's, you know, hard across government right now, that they might want to look into providing training to create an agency privacy lead from someone who's already there. And this is something that Utah is doing, which I thought was a great idea.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that some of these recommendations are not only just sort of interesting, but they're really practical and helpful. So I really strongly encourage anyone who has the chance to check out the report, because there's some really interesting information in here. So great work, Amy.
Thanks.
But of course, we can't end our podcast today without going through the lightning round, right? Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Great. Okay. So you and I do a lot of Zoom calls, and I often see some board games behind you in your home office during the Zoom call. So I'm wondering, what's your favorite board game?
Yes. Yes. My home office is also my 7-year-old's playroom. So I would have to say the two games that I would play if my daughter wasn't even around would be Sorry or Ticket to Ride. We have both the junior version and the adult version, and it's super fun.
Great. Well, my kids are 2 years and 4 months, so we're not at the board game phase yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
So a lot of listeners might not know that you spent some time in the Peace Corps, and I would like to know if you can tell us about your favorite memory from that experience.
Gosh, yes. I was in the Peace Corps from 2012 to 2014 in Indonesia, served with my husband. Wow. And obviously, 2 years worth of great memories. But one sort of unique experience that stands out was that as a English teacher, I was often invited to come speak at other schools to just sort of help kids practice listening to English. And I don't know, they called it like sharing motivation. So I was going to speak at an elementary school not far from where I lived. And transportation was always an issue because a lot of people rode motorcycles there, but we weren't allowed to as Peace Corps volunteers. A lot of people didn't own cars. So this school, as part of the invitation to get me to come speak to them, arranged the transportation. and they sent a horse-drawn carriage to pick me up. And it wasn't super far away. So I was like coming to the school in a horse-drawn carriage. And when I got to the school, all the students from the entire school were lined up at the sort of long drive down into the school, chanting, "Welcome, Miss Amy," the whole way. And I was like, it was like my Disney princess moment. So it was quite amazing hilarious. And a wonderful welcome.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, I would love to talk more about that, but I've got one more question before we let you go. And I know you also, like myself, love to go to live music concerts. So I'm just curious, what's the best live concert you've seen recently?
Definitely a couple Fridays ago, my husband and I went to Louisville and saw Trey Anastasio perform solo. He's the lead singer from the band Phish. And nice. It was really hot, but it was at a beautiful outdoor amphitheater in a park. And we were about 10 rows back. So it felt like a private concert almost. And it was just super fun and great to see him. We've seen Phish a lot of times too, but we're not usually that close. So it was really fun.
Awesome. That's very cool. Well, Amy, thanks so much for being guest today and telling us about the report. Again, encourage everybody to take a look at it.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm glad that we get to share it with our listeners. Thanks for listening to NASIO Voices. NASIO Voices is a production of the National Association of State Chief Information Officers.
For any of the state's CIOs, CISOs, or CTOs listening out there, don't forget to register for the upcoming Leadership Summit taking place at the end of July. Registration closes July 15th. And for those who are interested, the privacy report we talked about today is in the show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to NASIO Voices, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review. That helps more state IT professionals find us. That's it for now. Have a great July 4th holiday.